This is Carla Wills Brandon coming to you live from very warm Galveston, Texas. You would never know that it is winter here. Let me tell you, it is blisteringly warm. I went outside today in shorts, thongs. I definitely was not wearing winter clothes. Last week I was in North Carolina up in the mountains playing in the snow. And we got in the car and we drove back here. And there are some weird things going on weather-wise, gang. If you have been listening to Service Bloggin' Radio, I'm sure some of the hosts have been talking about the unseasonably weird weather patterns that we're having. Now, when I lived in California, the mudslides, they were a happening thing. I mean, they came around every so often, and the stories about the coffins rising to the surface after being buried and ending up in the freeways. I mean, I remember as a child hearing those stories. So, I remember those. I remember the Santa Ana winds, and I remember the fires and the dry times. But the fires in Central Texas, Cross Plains, I don't know how many of you know where Cross Plains is. There is absolutely nothing out there. It's really unusual country. I have family in Santa Fe, New Mexico, and so oftentimes we drive out there, and Cross Plains is it's kind of our junk food stop. So we pull into a convenience store and run in and gas up and junk up and move on. And it's just devastating, the fires out there. So with the hurricanes that we had this summer, and it seems like everybody everywhere is getting kind of socked with something. If it's not hurricanes, it's a gazillion feet of snow. And if it's not a gazillion feet of snow, it's mudslides. And if it's not mudslides, it's something else. So we're definitely going through some serious changes right now. My son is in Israel. He's been calling every night and keeping us posted on what's happening over there. He's over there for almost 2 weeks with about 200 other college kids. And I talked to him last night, and as we all know, Ariel Sharon had a stroke. And it looks like the stroke was caused by his blood thinner, Coumadin. That's a real serious blood thinner. That's actually rat poisoning. And interestingly, they're now blaming his stroke on the blood thinner, which is not surprising. People have these blood clots in their bodies and take these blood thinners, and that loosens things up, and ba-boom. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over there. I'm going to talk to him after I'm done talking to you. And if you would like to communicate with me, I would love to hear from you. And you can email me at drsbrandon, B-R-A-N-D-O-N, at sbc.net. Now, I'm getting ready. I'm going to be flying over to London on Sunday. I'm going to be attending a conference. It's a very interesting conference. This is a conference that takes a look at genocide. It's a group of people who are interested in things like the Holocaust. They're interested in taking, you know, Darfur. There's genocide going on over there. My cultural group, the ethnic Volga Germans living in Russia, were basically rounded up in 1941. Stalin had a bout of paranoia when Hitler invaded Russia. And these ethnic Germans had been living in Russia for 200 years. And what he did is he rounded them all up and he shipped them all to the gulags in Siberia. So I'm going to be going over there to talk about post-traumatic stress syndrome in survivors of the Holocaust. And I'm going to be talking about how post-traumatic stress syndrome in Vietnam vets, in those who have been involved in war, in concentration camp survivors, gulag survivors, sexual abuse survivors. Anytime we experience extreme trauma that is life-threatening, that is stress, that is not, we have normal everyday stress, which is something that we develop coping skills for, hopefully healthy coping skills for, to deal with our stress. We can have support groups and we can have activities and exercise and writing, and some people relieve stress with art and music. But PTSD, that's a whole different ball game. PTSD, if we don't take care of our own trauma, guess what, gang? We pass that stuff on down to our kids. Our kids will act out our trauma. And so research has shown that Holocaust survivors, if they don't tell the tale, if they don't debrief the story, if they don't feel the feelings, will pass these emotions on to their children. In my family, nobody ever talked about the relatives in Russia who were being starved and shot and hung. And the Russian government continues to cover up massive genocide that it has perpetrated on so many ethnic groups. The interesting thing is that the United States also plays a part in this. Because the United States wants to do business with Russia, they do not hold Russia accountable for the ethnic genocide that was perpetrated on so many different ethnic groups. So, at this conference in London, there are going to be people from various different universities, University of Berlin. There are going to be people from, oh my gosh, everywhere. London, let's see, we have University of Berlin, University of Vienna, University of Dallas, and then yours truly, little old Carla Wills Brandon. So this will be very interesting. I have not done a conference of this nature. I've done lots and lots of conferences all across the United States and in different parts of the UK, but not one like this. So I will be sure and give you all a full report when I get back. So we all survived the holidays, or did we? Did we survive the holidays? I don't know about you guys, but for Hanukkah, I sat in my pajamas. I'm like a pajama person. I sat in my pajamas and I looked at the snow, and we lit the candles on the menorah, and I made a pile of potato pancakes, and we just really kicked back and enjoyed ourselves. And my son Aaron was getting ready to go to Israel, and we were sitting around the fire one night, and one of the things that we were talking about is we were talking about my youngest son, Josh. My young son, Josh, had an encounter with an angel when he was 3 years old. My father-in-law had been very, very, very sick. He had had actually a stroke, just like Ariel Sharon. He had been put on Coumadin, just like Ariel Sharon. And what had happened was he had had a stroke. And so he lived with the stroke for about 5 years. I thought it was great that Dick Clark got out there and he for New Year's Eve, and he did his television program. And then I read something in the press that just made my blood boil. A couple of these critics were chastising him. They were actually chastising him for participating on this program after having a stroke. They said things like it was embarrassing, that he was slurring, that it was off. Oh, gosh, I'm telling you. We live in a society where still, pretty is as pretty does. We're all supposed to be young and tone and look a certain way and behave a certain way. And God bless them. He got out there. I thought he did a great job. But after watching all of that, what we did is we were sitting there and we were talking about how when my father-in-law was so, so sick, it was during the season of Hanukkah. It's been about 6 or 7 years since he passed. And my father-in-law, he was one of these characters. He always thought when you died, you just turned to worm food. And I'll never forget my sister and I standing over his bed while he was getting ready to take flight. My husband had actually seen his soul leave his body the night before. That's often reported. That's a typical deathbed vision. Before a passing, those sitting at the bedside have reported seeing the soul leave the body. And you and I, we've talked about that before. And my sister and I also saw some of that happen. But one day, Josh and I, we were driving off the island. On the island, there, on this island, you can get fish and fish and more fish and barbecue and then some more fish. And so if I want to go get some groceries that are sort of an organic nature, I've got to leave the island. I've got to pack a lunch and I've got to get in my car and take off. So when Josh was really little, he and I, we left the island and we went to the store, and we were driving to the store and he was really, really tired. And that's when Josh introduced me to Domus. And he started talking about Domus, and he talked incessantly about Domus. And he would say things to me like, "Mama, Domus is right here. Why can't you see him?" A few times he got mad at me because I wouldn't let Domus drive the car. And I attributed his discussions of Domus to the stress that we as a family experiencing because Pop was so sick. And my husband, the child psychologist, of course, looked at me and gave me some very clinical diagnosis of our child, who was reporting the fact that he was seeing this invisible character named Domus, who he described to me as some kid from the sky with red hair. That's who he said Domus was. I said, "Honey, who is Domus?" And he just looked very annoyed with me, and like I was dumber than dirt, and said that he was a kid from the sky. And I didn't see Domus. I didn't see anybody sitting there with red hair. One day, my husband and my son went to our office house. We used to have a great old office house that was 100 years old. We had a ghost in there. He was a nasty creature. Oh, he was just so nasty. I may have told you about him. He used to scare my patients. He was an older gentleman who liked to go up and down the stairs. And he would manifest himself. He manifested himself to one patient who was about 6'4", big old burly guy who had come in for some relationship problems. And this guy came running down the stairs and was scared stiff because I had a ghost upstairs. And then we had some kids. We had a little boy who was killed in the backyard. And so every once in a while they would mess around and move things in the house, and an office mate of mine, she'd get really upset because her things would be moved, and my husband, who would work nights, would hear them running up and down the stairs and laughing. And one day my husband and my youngest son, they decided that they were going to run to the office to pick up the mail, and I don't know what you kind of critters you guys have in your neck of the woods, but we've got possums everywhere here. My husband periodically likes to feed the possums, and then they invite their grandparents and their cousins and their children and their brothers and their sisters to my house. We have a herd of possums in the backyard. But as they were going to get the mail, they noticed that there was a dead, bloated possum laying there by the side of the house. And Josh lit my husband and said, "Oh, the possum went to the sky." And my husband looked at Josh and said, "What?" And Josh said, "The possum went to the sky, just like Daw is going to go to the sky." And Daw was his grandfather. So my 3-year-old son was having departing visions about his grandfather, and he had absolutely no fear of his grandfather's passing. And eventually, what did happen was that my father-in-law passed away. He passed away the day after Hanukkah. He waited until everybody had lit the candles and opened up the presents and eaten the potato latkes and the matzo ball soup and the biroks that I make, the Russian meat pies or boca pies for us vegetarians. And at 10 o'clock, after the 10 o'clock news, he died in my husband's arms. And I'm pretty sure I shared this on a previous show. But what I want to share with you is that Dunamis is actually a Hebrew angel, and translated from Aramaic into Hebrew, Dunamis is the angel of death. And so what I want to talk about for the next couple of shows, I want to talk a little bit about encounters with angels, encounters with beings, otherworldly beings. I've had deathbed vision accounts from people who have shared that they have seen angels. And one of the things that's really interesting about the departing vision with regard to angels is that, you know, Hallmark has presented us with these beautiful, angelic, Aryan, youthful, cheruby, or godlike, goddess-like, dressed in white, gold-tipped, winged creatures who are angels. And so a lot of us, that's what we think angels are. But I have received a lot of accounts of the woman in white, accounts. There was a little boy whose grandfather had passed away, and he and his mother were at the cemetery, and the little boy had no fear of death, no fear of coffins, no fear of graves. As a matter of fact, he looked in the coffin, he took one look at his grandfather, and he turned to his mother and he said, "He is not there. He's gone." And this is, we're talking a little boy, 5 or 6 years of age. And while at the cemetery, this little boy announced to his mother that his grandfather was walking away with a couple of angels. And he actually waved at his grandfather. Now, in this reported departing vision, there are no discussions of wings. Actually, when Barrett, one of the original investigators into departing visions, interviewed children who had seen angels, he asked them about wings. And this is in the 1900s. And they said the angels did not have wings. I have not received one departing vision, one account of a departing vision, where there is a discussion of angels with wings. Typically, they are described as, there is like a knowing that they're some sort of otherworldly being. Oftentimes, they're not even called angels. Sometimes, they're dressed in white. Sometimes when people have near-death experiences and they go through the light and they come to the other side, they will discuss people in white, beings in white. Now, another interesting occurrence is that sometimes people will talk about men in black, how the men in black have come, and initially they'll be really, really scared. They'll, especially if they're an atheist, they'll feel very uncomfortable with these visions. And as time goes on, they become comfortable and they understand that this is some sort of angel or supernatural spirit who has come to take care of them. Now, I also believe that those generations way, 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 way before us who believed that our departed loved ones watch over us in an angelic fashion, that they had some. A lot of people get into some of this New Age stuff. I always like listening to people who are immersed in New Age, and because they wear tie-dye and drink a lot of miso soup, they think that they are spiritually more evolved than the rest of us. And I would just like to slap them. Some of these folks make a big deal about guides and about talking to their guides, and they have all sorts of rituals for anything with their guides. And to be honest with you, gang, all you have to do is sit down and close your eyes for about 2 seconds and just ask, who's watching over me? Who's there for me? Come to me in a dream, please. And you're going to have a vision of something. Something's just going to pop up. And the first thing that pops up for you while you're doing this little exercise will most likely be connected to whoever is watching over you. So I've had some people say to me, well, Carla, I did your exercise and all I saw was a rock. And so I said, well, go back and sit down and close your eyes again and visualize who's sitting on the rock. And then they'll have a vision of somebody or something sitting on the rock. And maybe it's their higher self. Maybe it's an angel. Maybe it's a departed relative, a relative who has passed on. I shared with you that when I was visiting Raymond Moody in his Theater of the Mind, I was visited and had visual contact with all of my deceased relatives who let me know real clearly that they watch over me. My son truly believes that his grandfather watches over him. So I have a friend, and for those of you who are interested, I really, really, really want you to go to his site. He is a sweetheart. He runs the About Paranormal site. His name is Stephen Wagner, and he is your guide to paranormal phenomena. So all you have to do is plug into your search engine, Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N, Wagner, W-A-G-N-E-R, Paranormal Phenomena, or About Paranormal Phenomena. And you will pull him up, and you need to bookmark him, and you need to get on his email list, because he always has, I've known him for several years, and he always has just wonderful things on his site. And he has gobs and gobs and gobs of stuff about angelic interventions. And so here's something I pulled off his site for your review. And he says, do angels exist? Are there supernatural spiritual beings that watch over us? Now, personally, I think yes. Are they the Hallmark type? No. Are they the type in the Da Vinci pictures or in some of the medieval pictures? No. Okay. Many believe that angels are not only around us at all times, but that in certain instances they can even intervene in our lives. Sometimes they offer comforting feelings or words or messages of encouragement. In the most astonishing cases, they are even credited with changing the course of lives, saving lives. Here are some amazing stories from readers, ordinary people just like you. So once again, gang, psychics don't have a foothold on this stuff. Oh my gosh, I have to tell you, the psychic will remain anonymous. But this psychic I had some friends who they called me up and they said that they had bought tickets to this psychic show, and they were very expensive tickets. And they asked me if I thought it was a good idea to go see this person. And since they had bought the tickets and there was no refund on the tickets, I said, well, you might as well go check this individual out. I had had contact with this individual at one time when this person wanted something. I think this person is naturally gifted, but I also think that they are in the business. Well, long story short, these two buddies of mine, they go and they stand in the long line, and they go and they sit, and here comes this psychic, of course, fanfare, the whole shabam, comes out on stage and proceeds to spend the next 2 hours hawking products. Not giving psychic readings, but hawking products. Buy my books, buy my tapes. Sign up for a reading from me for several hundreds of dollars. Have me come to your party for several more hundreds of dollars. My friends were so upset. These two were university professors. And so, of course, they come to me and they go, okay, this stuff is all garbage. You know, it's a racket. And I got so angry, I get so upset when people who are really gifted, have the ability to educate and to share. I understand needing to make a buck. I have no qualms with that. But totally raping the public by charging exorbitant fees and being so just greedy. That's not spiritual at all. It'd be like me as a therapist charging my clients bazillions of dollars just because I'm very intuitive and I'm incredibly good at what I do. I mean, that's the only thing I can really say I'm really, really good at. I am. I'm really good at it. But I would never in a million years take advantage financially. I'm supposed to be here to do a service. So I was really, really upset when I saw that. Okay, I'm getting off my soapbox again. Let's get back to angels. Okay, according to my buddy Steven and his site, when an individual, some woman, lost custody of her child, the woman, Helen, fell into a dark depression from which she saw no remedy. I came to a breaking point where I did not want to live with the circumstances as they were. My pain was too great. I can't imagine losing my child. Oh, that would devastate me. Helen says, I cried my heart out to God so strongly, then collapsed on my bedroom floor with a completely broken heart. I just kept asking God, why me? Why did this turn out this way? Suddenly, I heard a man's voice very clearly and calmly say, get up. It's not over. It's not over yet. At first, I was afraid, but then extreme peace came over me. I stopped crying and stood up. Those words gave me hope. I went to bed and began to pray again to God when suddenly I felt a kiss on my cheek. It was clear as day, but there was nobody in the room with me. And once again, I felt tremendous peace. Then I fell asleep, and I had a dream of Archangel Michael standing beside my bed, staring down at me with incredible concern. And then she goes on to describe him in, like, serious detail. Blue eyes, strong nose, wearing white. I knew that he had come to protect me. The next morning, I awoke for the first time feeling as if my burdens were lifted. It was the first time I asked God to help me. I have a friend who I used to keep in contact with. He's a recovering alcoholic, and he had an experience where he got just blasted, just pie-eyed, and he drove his car into a ditch, and he had never asked a higher power or God or anybody to help him out. And, you know, sitting there in the ditch, blottoed, he sat there for quite a while, actually. He got to sober up in the ditch in his car, all banged up. And so he called out to the universe and said, hey, I need some help. I can't keep living like this. And an angel appeared to him and said to him, you'll be okay. And the guy's been sober for like 9 bazillion years now. So the next morning, this woman awoke and she asked God to help her forgive the judge, her husband, and all the people who had taken her child away from her. From that day on, her depression lifted, and she began to build her life as a weekend mom, so she had hope. Today, I have an excellent relationship with my son. So, people can be touched by otherworldly beings. My mother, I've shared with some of you, she died a tragic death at the age of 38. She had this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful friend. Now, this friend came from a family, very, very large family of, very Italian family, very huggy, kissy, touchy, loud, loud family. I used to spend my summers in Morro Bay, California with this family. If you haven't ever been to Morro Bay in California, if you ever want to take a vacation, put that on your list as a place to go. It's wonderful. It's artisans community. You got Hearst Castle up the way, San Luis Obispo down the way. Oh, that's where I ran wild like a gypsy in the summertime. But her, let's see, Dee's parents and my grandparents were friends. Dee and my mother were friends. Her husband, Don, and my father were friends. And so, of course, naturally, us kids were friends, and I'm still in touch with Deanie Opperman, who used to have a radio show out of California. He's an incredible writer. He did some ghost writing for Jonathan Winters. He's a real hoot. But my mother, when she was getting close to death, my friend Dee did not know what to do. She was devastated. She knew my mom was having a really rough time. She knew my mom needed some comforting, but she didn't really know what to do. Well, she walked into a bookstore, and she looked at all of these spiritual books on the shelf, and she didn't know which one to pick. And she says, the story goes, all of a sudden, she had a vision of a man. And all she could see was from the neck up. That's all she remembers seeing. And she remembers that the man looked at her and said, I know what you need. And he turned to the shelf and he pulled out a copy of The Prophet. And he handed it to her and then he vanished. I mean, like, not walked out the door, vanished, or went to the other room, vanished, like, vanished. And so Dee took the book to my mother, and the book actually gave her peace as death drew near. So Dee loved telling that story, and she believes it was an angel, that it was an angel who came to her in her hour of need to assist her and bringing my mother some peace. My mother was scared stiff of dying. She was going to be leaving three small children behind. She was scared stiff that we were going to have to go live with my father, who, not a nice guy, involved in a few illegal activities on the dark side of the moon that if you want to know about, you can email me. And she was really worried about that. And so this book gave her some peace. Well, Stephen has another story, so let me share this story with you. This is called My Son's Protector. One theory says that angels are spiritual beings who never lived as mortals. You know, everybody's got to have an opinion. Others, however, believe that loved ones who have passed on can become our guardian angels. This I totally believe. I totally, totally believe this. Years ago, it was 9/11, actually. I was really scared stiff. I had a bunch of relatives in New York. I had several patients in New York when 9/11 happened. We could not get in touch with one cousin. We were just scared stiff. What we found out after the fact, once we finally tracked him down, is that he had been outside the Pentagon when the plane had crashed into that building. And he had basically had to walk home. I mean, traffic came to a stop. He had to walk back to Bethesda. It was very overwhelming. I had patients who were lots of unusual stories of relatives who were supposed to be at the World Trade Center, and then something happened that kept them from being there, and they missed experiencing the tragedy. I have one cousin who was supposed to be at a lunch meeting there, and he was supposed to show up that morning, and something came up, and so he didn't go. Other friends who were supposed to be in the area, a couple of patients who went to schools around the World Trade Center, and they ended up not going for that day for whatever reason. But it was a really, really hard couple of weeks. And I really needed my mother. I needed to know my mother was there. I was just needing some momming, mothering. And so I have a picture on the wall that my sister had pinpointed. It's beautiful. It's a couple of birds on a branch. Beautiful, delicate work. And whenever I've been in a really serious, bad place, my mom comes and moves that picture. That's how I know that she's around. And I told her, I said, could you please come? Just come. Come see me in a dream. Come visit me. Come tell me everything's going to be okay. And what started happening is that picture started to move. And so I knew that my mom was around. So I really do believe that the generations before us, that they watch over us, that they give us a little nudge, a little push here and there. Well, anyway, Anne, in this story, was one of those people. She believes her mother may be watching over her son from another plane of existence. There's also like this sense, it's like a really strong sense that we're being watched, that somebody's there and it's not scary. Unless we watch one of these damn Hollywood movies that, you know, turns all of this stuff into gore and horror, and you know, our relatives from the grave are going to come and get us, and oh, I just get so frustrated with that. Do you notice that there's more of that on TV lately? Okay. When my son was 7, he came running in the house on a usual day with an unusual tail. He He said he was out riding bikes and running around like all kids did. He was running really fast and tripped on something he didn't see. As he looked at the ground he was about to hit, there was a 2x4 with a big nail sticking out of it pretty far, and it was headed right for the middle of his forehead. There was no stopping his momentum. Suddenly, two adult-sized hands grabbed him around the torso and set him upon his feet, just like that, and there was no one near him at the time. Why does Anne think it was her mother? She remembers a powerful experience when her son was just 4 months old. One night, I was home alone with my son, Josh. I was at the end of the hallway, sitting on the edge of the tub, running a bath. Where I was, I could see the living room, and Josh was in the room right off the living room, and he was in his crib asleep. Suddenly, I knew someone was sitting in a chair in line of my sight, but there was no one physically there. Have you ever had that sensation that you know someone's there? You just know it. You feel it in your bones, but visually with your eyes, you can't see anything. I turned off the water, seeing as my son was in the room next to this thing, I had no choice but to confront it. I was not afraid. That's the other experience that most people report, is that they're not afraid. They know that there's an otherworldly visitor hanging around, but there's not fear. My youngest son, he's funny, he asked me the other day, he said, "Well, Mom, I know you believe in ghosts and all this stuff," and he loves horror movies, and so he and I, my husband and I, we always have to go back and clean up the mess of Hollywood, because my son, for a long time, he was afraid of ghosts because of what Hollywood was presenting. So one of the things he asked me, and this is like a real true kid question, he wanted to know if ghosts watch him go to the restroom. And I said, "Honey, they have no interest in you going to the restroom. Don't worry about it." Okay. It was as if a door to another place altogether had opened up in front of me. The entity came in and put its arms around me. The closer it got, the more love I felt so intensely. I came to know who it was. It was my mom. By the time she actually embraced me, I was in tearful joy. She moved over to the room my son was in. She was standing next to his crib, admiring him and telling me without words just how beautiful he was and how loved he was. I saw her smile at me. Maybe she's been with us all along. But you know that sense that there are people who have gone on before us who come back to check on us and make sure we're okay. Okay, so as I started out this discussion, I talked to you about the angel of death. Now, most people, when you say to them, angel of death, what do they think about? Just close your eyes and visualize angel of death, and probably what you see is a Hollywood version of the Grim Reaper, dude dressed in black from head to toe. He's got the sickle that my relative used in Russia to harvest wheat. That's mythology, gang. There's a lot of poo-poo over Satan and the angel of death. And the bottom line is, the angel of death is not something that we need to be afraid of, okay? I mean, the angel of death has definitely been personified throughout history. And, of course, today, it's even in the Bible, death is seen as something that's negative and not positive, or something that's supposed to happen that's part of the life cycle. Every culture has a vision of death. Every culture does. You know, Western culture, unfortunately, we just seem to be a little more paranoid than the rest of the world. Actually, I believe that the angel of death, that this is just deceased relatives coming to help us. But if you go into the Bible, there are all sorts of accounts about angels. I mean, angels abound. If you take a look at fiction, there are all sorts of different representations of death. There's the sickle. We talked about the devil. We talked about the four horsemen. Just lots and lots of different beliefs with regard to death. I mean, we've talked a lot about movies and we've talked about Hollywood and how keen I am on all that stuff. But the bottom line is, the angel of death is nothing to fear. There's another site that's actually, they have a whole section on the angel of death, and there are some accounts, and I was looking at some of this stuff, and I got to tell you, the owner of this site basically calling this the angel of death, it sounds to me more like deathbed vision. So here's what I'm going to share with you. I've had several episodes of the paranormal. However, most recently, I experienced him. I guess this person's talking about the angel of death. Last year, I am a nurse at a large hospital in Salem, Massachusetts. One of my patients called me to her bedside to tell me she was feeling not quite right and that she felt as if she was going to die. You know, it's really interesting. My cousin's mother died not long ago, and just a couple weeks ago. And actually what she did, she knew she was going to die, and so she rang up the entire family, and the family flew to Florida, and they were able to be with her right before she passed. Oftentimes the dying, they know when they're going to take flight, and what they will do is they will hang on and they will wait until they finish up their business, until they say what they need to say or see who they need to see or pass on information they need to pass on. Up until that point, the woman was in good health and was only admitted for a diagnostic exam. But slowly, the woman began to lose consciousness, and in fact, she started to die. You know, interestingly, I get lots of reports like this from nurses. Nurses have no problem, for the most part, sharing paranormal experiences. I asked this doctor to add to one of my books his take on the departing vision. And he wrote me something really, really quick. My wife had had an after-death communication. Her father had passed away. It was very, very traumatic. Her husband, the doctor, had been in the room while the father had passed away. I think it was a heart attack. And then she had an after-death communication from him where he came to her and he told her everything was fine and not to worry. And so I mistook her experience as an indicator that he was going to be open too. Wrong. And I asked him if he would contribute to my book in a positive nature about how doctors should respond to departing visions. And I asked him to write something up, and I asked him to make it positive. And he gave me something very sketchy. And so I edited it and tried to keep the content to his liking, and I put it in my book. And do you know, he got very upset. He didn't want to be associated with that paranormal poo-poo. So it's always interesting. Doctors have a hard time accepting this stuff. They've got way too many educational hours behind them. But nurses, more touchy-feely of the bunch, who have direct patient care more often, who are doing day-to-day caretaking with patients, they feel pretty open about this stuff. They have no problem talking about it for the most part. But anyway, all the time I was doing everything possible to regain her. I had called in several people for help, and soon the room was filled with nurses and doctors. I stood back from her bed by the doorway, giving the doctor a report and what transpired. Then I saw out of the corner of my eye someone dressed in black. Here we have an account of someone dressed in black. I really didn't pay much attention to him because I was concentrating more on the patient. The person dressed in black walked away from her bedside and started to leave the room. And as I was standing in the doorway, I had to move for him to get out. I did so saying, "Oh, excuse me," and I felt a huge breeze as he brushed by me. I turned to the person next to me and asked who that was who just left. This person said, "No one just left." I gave a description of the person, but they still insisted that nobody just went out that room. Just at that moment, the patient rapidly regained consciousness. was at that point I realized who the person was in black. So the patient obviously had come close to death. Now here's another one. About a year ago, I attended the funeral of an acquaintance of my husband's. I had no choice but to bring my children with me to the graveside service. You know, I always crack up. Why do people get so weird about taking their kids to funeral services? So many people in my private practice, when there's a death and I'm doing grief therapy and bereavement therapy and some of the sideline stuff with maybe cleaning up unfinished business with the departed, and, which involves it's therapeutic technique. There are ways to somebody who's been molested and they're very upset, and the person who molested them has died. They can still confront them. There are ways to do that therapeutically, which work really well. But what's interesting is a lot of times the question I receive the most from people when they are dealing with bereavement is, should I take the children to the funeral? My response is, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you take your child to the funeral? I mean, funerals are part of the life cycle. When I went to my mother's funeral, nobody explained to me what a funeral was. I was totally unaware of what that involved. I knew nothing about coffins. I knew nothing about embalming. I knew Zippo, nothing. And nobody talked about death or dying in my family. And so when I went to the funeral, I was absolutely stunned at what I saw. I was very, very overwhelmed. But my children, I mean, I remember going to my mother-in-law's funeral, and my youngest son was sitting on my lap, and he was playing his Game Boy. He had seen Grandma dead, and he knew she wasn't there, and so he basically was not very interested. When he went to his grandfather's funeral, he was more interested in climbing on the headstones. And I'll never forget, some of the relatives were absolutely appalled that I was allowing my son to crawl on the family headstones. They thought that that was so disrespectful and that he shouldn't be there. And why had I brought him? And I said, it's his grandfather's funeral. He wants to be here with the family. He had a departing vision about his grandfather dying. He knows his daw went to the sky. He just wants to be here with all of us. But so many people, they get all upset about whether or not they should bring their children to a funeral. My husband thought it would be a good idea, as they hadn't been exposed to the death of anyone at this age, not even a family member. Now, if we sit down and we talk to children responsibly about death and dying and are supportive of them and answer their questions in age-appropriate terms, it's perfectly, perfectly acceptable for them to go to a funeral. We were standing around the gravesite while people took turns eulogizing the deceased. All of a sudden, my 5-year-old started walking off as if he saw something standing at the foot of the grave. Everyone was silent as he walked up to a point, looked up, and started talking as if to a real person, but I saw no one. We've talked about how younger children oftentimes are more receptive to otherworldly visitors than we are. They haven't been tainted by society yet. It was an awkward situation as I couldn't pull him away from this spot. A bit frustrated, I asked him, "Who are you talking to anyway?" He replied, unnerved, just like my Josh did. He thought I was so stupid when I asked him who Domus was and who he was talking to. Well, this little boy was obviously very perturbed with his parents and replied, "I'm talking to the real tall skinny man in the long black coat." Of course, no one else saw this, or at least no one else admitted seeing this. After the service, I asked my son what they talked about, and his reply was he didn't remember, but that he talked without moving his lips. I get a chill just thinking about this. So I guess what I need to say is that one of the things I want you to think about for the next couple of weeks, you know, when I get back from London, we will resume our discussion of angels, is that, okay, so what do you think angels are? Do you think that an angel is some mystical superior being who comes to you and gives you guidance and is like a spiritual parent and helps you through life and helps you through rough times? Or do you think that possibly angels are our deceased relatives who, you know, a mom wants to mom. Momming does not end with death. Dads still want a dad. The woman's dad who came to her in an after-death communication was worried about her. She came to his daughter and he sat her down and he told her, look, I'm okay. I'm here for you. Or the woman who was feeling really, really distressed about her parenting and she was feeling very overwhelmed with life and her mother had been her rock and she was used to getting on the phone and calling her mother every time there were problems with her children. Just because physical death happened with her mom did not mean that connection between mother and daughter was broken. Mom still came back. Mom still checked in. Mom still gave her reassurance when she needed it. So do you think that angels are our deceased relatives? One of my clients, her guardian angel is her grandmother. She and her grandmother were extremely tight. And in my practice, when I'm working with people who are bereaved and they're having a hard time making a connection with a concept of a higher power, I'll say to them, who is your favorite deceased relative? Do you ever feel like this deceased relative is with you? Do you have a sense that they're with you? And typically, once they identify a favorite deceased relative, a mother, a father, a grandmother, an aunt, an uncle, a sister, a brother, then what we'll do is we'll do a little exercise where they visualize this deceased relative and they ask this deceased relative if they are with them. And immediately, do you know what comes up? Yes, I'm here for you. And an exercise will be to journal to this deceased relative, to pour one's heart out to this deceased relative, to ask for support, to ask for some guidance. And I'm going to tell you something. What ends up happening is there is a connection that's made. That bridge between life and death is crossed. And the living and the physical, the deceased are communicating. Physically deceased, spiritually they're still there and they are communicating. Now the skeptics would tell you that I'm nuttier than a fruitcake and it's magical thinking and it's wishful thinking. Well, you tell that to those individuals who have seen visually with their own eyes their deceased relatives who have come to them during times of trauma. Or you tell that to this woman whose mother came from the other side to protect her grandson from taking a fall and then embraced her daughter to let her know that she was near. So that's what I'm going to ask you to do, gang. It's time for me to go. I got to go pack up my little suitcase, put my all my little goodies in there and get ready to take my flight to go across the pond to the other side of the world. And please email me if you have a comment about tonight's show or if you have a story to tell. You can email me at drsbrandon@sbcglobal.net. And tune in to some of the other shows on Service Blogging, BBS Radio. It's radio for those who want a different bent. If you're tired of listening to the same old spin night after night on television or hearing the same old spin on the radio and you want a different perspective, tune in. If it's of interest to you, BBS has it. So this is Carla Wills Brandon saying good night and sweet dreams.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogginservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.